Chapter 18. Adramelech stood at attention before the prince. "We have sustained heavy losses, but there are reserves. We could renew the assault within the hour. What are your orders?"
"Our work is finished here. I accomplished what I wanted with Abigail. She's ready for the next stage in my plan. Leave enough warriors here so the Guardians won't suspect anything. But I want at least 2 full legions moved to the operation at her banquet hall before she arrives."
"Under Morax's command?"
"No. I will handle this operation myself. We will stage in the Bronze Hall northwest of the cottage. There is no line of sight to the cottage from there, and we now have full control of that hall."
"As you wish."
"And Commander?"
"Sir?"
"Do it quietly."
Abigail stopped and looked back toward the orchard.
"I crossed an hour ago?"
Adam drew close. He smiled at a curl that had fallen in front of her eyes and gently swept it back. "After you made it across, I thought you'd be..." He traced her lips with his thumb. "I was hoping to see that smile again." She looked away. "What is it, Abigail?"
"I'm glad to be free, and I'm grateful to everyone. But when I think of what this has cost, the danger you all faced..."
Her eyes teared.
"What if one of you had died? I would..."
"Dying to save you would be an honor for any man," Adam said. "Which is why we aren't stopping now. Your rescue won't be complete until your smile is restored." She forced a grin, but it was empty. Even if she could somehow regain her happiness, it would never be like before. Too much had happened. As they neared the grasslands, the group stopped. A decomposing body lay in the path.
"Just step over it," Levi said. "It's not like it's the first body we've seen with a hole in the chest."
Levi seemed puzzled at the group's reaction.
"I know it's disgusting to look at, but it's a good thing, right? It means the person was made new, like us. Why are you so..."
Levi caught a glimpse of the man's face. His own face. The group stood in silence. Levi stepped between the corpse and the group.
"Don't look at him. Please, just don't look."
Charles put a hand on Levi's shoulder.
"It's nothing to be embarrassed about, Levi. We know that's not what you are anymore. A man is what he is, not what he was."
Levi considered that for a moment. Then a smile crept across his face. He nudged the body out of the path with his foot, and the group resumed the journey. As they walked, Kaelin stepped between Adam and Levi from behind and put an arm around each of them.
"So tell us your stories. What was it like going through the cottage?"
"Why ask us?" Levi said. "You've been through it. You know that place a lot better than either of us."
"I know the rooms. But each person's experience in those rooms is unique, especially in the Room of Delights. I was carried into that room by the mighty wind. Is that how it happened for you?"
"I couldn't even get into that room at first," Levi said. "The wind was so fierce on the inside, the door wouldn't open. I threw all my weight against it, and it didn't budge."
Laith let out a hearty belly laugh.
"Your weight? What weight? I've eaten meals that weighed more than you."
Levi smiled.
"Believe me, Laith, not even you would have been able to open that door, despite your great..."
"Girth?"
Laith asked, holding his belly with both hands.
"I was going to say strength, but since you mention it..."
As the friends laughed, Abigail drew close to Adam.
"You look happy."
His only reply was a satisfied grin, one Abigail didn't think she had ever seen on his face before. After a few thoughtful strides, he spoke.
"I've had friends before, but not like this. It's hard to describe. To be with people who have fought alongside me, risked their lives for me in battle, picked me up when I was wounded, people who can poke fun at each other without getting offended, and I can just be myself without any fear of rejection.
It's like family?
His smile broadened. He put his arm around her shoulders and pulled her to his side.
Yeah.
He filled his lungs. Like family. As the group approached the grasslands, Levi ran ahead. But when he reached the tree line, he stopped short.
What is it?
Called Adam. His silence beckoned the others to jog up and see. When they did, they were also dumbstruck. All except Charles. When the aged server looked out over the valley, he lit up with a smile his face could hardly contain. The river now flowed along the edge of the forest, on the east side of the grasslands. It had moved a mile eastward. The group stood in stunned silence.
What in the world happened here? Adam asked.
Still smiling, Charles resumed the journey with renewed energy.
When you see the map room, you'll understand.
Richard Wesley, one of the banquet servers, hadn't stopped running since he left the hall. As he descended the steep slope to the river, he slid more than ran, sending dirt and rocks tumbling before him. When the bottom of the valley came into view, he stopped short, almost losing his balance.
Where's the river? Could we have gained territory at a time like this?
He scrambled the rest of the way down. It was at the site of the old riverbed where he met the group. Their upbeat greetings quickly gave way to alarm when they saw the look on his face.
Charles, you have to hurry,
Richard pleaded.
The hall is in trouble. Someone got infected, and it's spread throughout the hall. They're biting and devouring one another. The family is being torn to shreds, and hardly anyone has been eating.
Charles grimaced.
When I left the hall in your care, I warned you to beware of this.
I know. I kept watch to the east, but these wolves didn't come from the outside. Charles, it was some of our own servers who gathered a following and became wolves.
He gripped Charles' arm.
There's no time for the ridge path. If you don't get back to the hall soon, there might not be a hall when you get back.
Charles cast an anxious look toward the steep path ahead, then glanced at Abigail.
You all go on,
Abigail said.
Don't wait for me. I'd slow you down.
I'm not leaving you alone, Adam said. They can take care of the wolves. I'll stay with you.
Each of the friends gave Abigail a hug and started up the steep side, Richard leading the way. When the hall came into view, Charles hardly recognized the place he had spent his life serving. Broken windows, holes in the roof, walls leaning, even the foundations appeared compromised. How could it have become so dilapidated in such a short time? A splinter pricked his hand as Charles pushed the front door open. Inside, he shivered, as if he had stepped from springtime into a cold, dark winter. Though almost mealtime, only a handful of people dotted the quiet hall. As more trickled in, they arranged the tables in clusters, each group with their backs to the others. When the servers brought out the food, few ate. Those who did only nibbled. Everyone appeared malnourished and nursed wounds from too many wolf bites to count. Charles didn't know where to begin. As his eyes swept the room, his very life disintegrated before him. Building this family had consumed his every spare moment, all his money, all his thoughts, his skills, his energy. His entire existence had been devoted to making this hall one of the best places in the world to enjoy the ruler's food. And now... The ruler made no appearance during the meal, and when it was over, the hall emptied quickly. Most avoided eye contact with Charles on the way out. As Hodia approached the exit, Charles pulled her aside.
You know this family as well as anyone. You've been here from the beginning. What happened?
Her cold, flat tone surprised him.
This is what happens when you neglect the flock. If you want to know why young people in the hall go off to the orchard, just look in the mirror. You don't listen to people, and you run this place like a dictator, as if the hall belonged to you. It doesn't.
A gut punch. Bewilderment silenced him. Hodia, already making her way to the door, didn't seem to want a response anyway. When all had left, Charles sat at one of the tables and picked at some of the many leftovers.
but even he could hardly taste the food. After a few bites, he pushed the plate away and buried his face in his hands. He was glad the people were gone, but at the same time, loneliness haunted him.
What was that?
He lifted his head and scanned the room. His eyes landed on the kitchen doors. Someone was in there. He held his breath and watched. Was the ruler about to step out and speak to him? Oh, for a simple word of encouragement, an affirming glance, anything to show Charles still had his favor. His desperate eyes locked on the doors, willing them to open. The longer he watched, the more hope faded, then died. Whatever he heard must have been his imagination. Had the ruler forsaken this hall? Had their lamp been snuffed out? Unthinkable! Yet every moment the kitchen door remained still, the possibility grew. Was Hodia right? Had he been an unprofitable servant for the ruler without realizing it? If that's what he needed to hear from the ruler, so be it. He just needed to hear something. His gaze refused to let loose of the doors. Please, let them open. Be comforting or be angry, but come to me. The sealed portals stood as giant, motionless stones, and Charles' sobs echoed throughout the desolate space. Five of Charles' guardians, vastly outnumbered by the warrior host in the room, bravely stood by him, obeying, if not understanding, their orders. The sixth conversed with the ruler in the kitchen. The stately guardian spoke in a hushed, reverent tone.
I understand the purpose of the test, but why are we not permitted to strengthen Charles' heart? Would it not honor you if he were reassured by your promises?
This is a crisis in which I want to strengthen him directly, said the ruler. I will lay my hand on his shoulder and bring him comfort that will change him forever. The meal I have prepared for him will nourish every part of his inner man. It will penetrate between joints and marrow. You will see what it looks like for a human soul to erupt with delight that dwarfs the cloud of his pain, even as his pain persists.
The guardian's confusion gave way to anticipation. Few things delighted him more than watching the ruler encourage a saint directly, but traces of confusion remained.
You're wondering why the delay, said the ruler. This will be the greatest meal Charles has ever eaten. But for this kind of food to be digested, he must first have the greatest appetite he's ever had. He must thirst with such desperate pangs that he feels he will die if he does not have a drink. And indeed, he will be on the brink of death. Otherwise, his soul would not be able to absorb this food and drink.
The ruler faced the mighty guardian and gripped both his shoulders.
It is necessary.
Those last three words the guardian never doubted. The pain the ruler brought upon his people, while sharp, was never pointless.